But one of the things that you, one of the reasons why you go, and not only just because of your duty, but if you read a great book like the one that I've read, The Incredible Catholic Mass, one of the things that you learn, and unfortunately, this is not taught, and people are not reminded of this. There are so many opportunities for graces that are going on just inside the celebration of the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass. It takes Father Kokim almost 20 chapters to make, and I don't think it's a complete list.
Yeah, I mean the Mass is a fountain of grace. I mean all of the sacraments are fonts of grace. And of course, the Mass gives us the Eucharist, which is a sacrament. But the Holy Sacrifice of the Mass is not only a sacrament; it's also a sacrifice. So, I mean, the Mass itself is the sacrifice, and we get the sacrament from that sacrifice. But we're participating in the sacrifice of Calvary. So it's as if we're standing before the crucifix, you know, at the time that our Lord offered his sacrifice to his Father. So yeah, I mean it's a tremendous font of grace, both as a sacrifice and as a sacrament.
Brother Andre Marie from the St. Benedict Center and host of Reconquest Radio here on the Crusade Channel on the Dude Maker Skype line with us for our regular Wednesday appearance. Brother, there's a piece that's out fresh and new this morning at crisismagazine.com. It has the following title: Is the Ute Synod's final document already written? Now,
if I were a betting man, my money would be on it. But of course, I don't have any money, and I don't bet. So,
well, I'll wager for you, because before this abomination began, I had been talking about this and been talking about it for like the last 6-9 months, maybe even a little longer. That look, everybody knows, and if you don't know, then you're not paying attention. They only needed this stupid synod here to provide some cover, so that they could say that they got all, you know, apostolic-y, right? And they had this say, oh, no, we listen to all opinions. And look, it's important for the post-conciliar church to meet with the, you know, with the hoi polloi and hear what's going on out there. And look, we got a good taste, a good sampling of what the people are demanding here. There's a couple of things here. First of all, when did the Church of Rome become a democracy?
Well, Mike, there's a lot more to it. I mean, obviously, the Church of Rome is not a democracy, and what we have is the Church of Rome is actually a pontifical monarchy, and I use those words very deliberately. Pontifical, a pontiff is a bishop, a bridge builder, and it comes from the old Roman pagan priesthood. Actually, they were considered as bridge builders between heaven and earth, yet. That's something that that concept can easily be baptized and was, and in as much as the priesthood, especially in its fullness in the episcopacy, is an institution that builds a bridge between heaven and earth. And so the supreme pontiff, aka the Roman pontiff, is the Pope. And so in the church, there is one pontiff who is monarch. And this is I get what I said from the book Pontifical Monarchy by Dom Guéranger. It's published in English as Papal Monarchy, but I think there was a mistake to translate it that way. It's Pontifical Monarchy in French. And his idea was to show that among all the pontiffs, we have one who's monarch. So of course, monarchy is not very popular today. It's not ideologically correct. So we wanted to present the church as a democracy. The only thing is, they're democratizing the church through a process of thugocracy, through a process of oligarchy joined to tyranny, and this, of course, is the farthest thing from Catholic you can possibly have. But another thing to be said about the synod, and this is important, in as much as synodality is a real issue between us and the Orthodox. The Orthodox, you know that the Orthodox and the Eastern Christians in general refer to the ecumenical councils as the ecumenical synods. It's a gathering of bishops, a synod.